Plenty of people like nothing more than experiencing nature.
Well, Shorewood native Pete Fromm realized he was one of those people. That love led to adventures, including a winter spent guarding salmon eggs in Idaho and a memoir chronicling it.
A quarter century later, Fromm had another experience guarding fish eggs, this time in Montana, and that experience is distilled in Fromm's latest book, The Names of the Stars.
Fromm told Lake Effect Susan Bentz that his parents planted the seed, perhaps unknowingly, of his love of the wild through family camping trips.
Then when we were 12, well, I was 12, they took a big trip out west, and I saw the Grand Tetons and thought, wow, this is a pretty cool place. And those mountains are so dramatic, just jutting up out of the plains with a river running in front of them. And they took us on they pooled all their dollars and got the kids on a little float trip down the Snake. And I thought I could do that again. And so when it came time to go to college, I picked Montana out of a hat and said, let's do that.
So one of your early roommates had a lot to do with your really diving in, right?
Yeah, a guy named Raider. He came out to Montana because he was in love with mountain man stories and read them constantly.
Read them to you, right?
Yeah, it can get a little creepy when pretty much a stranger starts reading to you in a little tiny room, but he would just pick out the coolest stories, like Hugh Glass getting chewed up and spit out by a grizzly, and they were very romanticized. Mostly half lies, but we fell for them. I was 18, 19 years old, so we really began wishing we'd been born 200 years earlier, because we missed it all.
Subsequently, you spent a bunch of years in, at least part-time, in the Tetons. Is that where it was first?
Well, I was still in college.
Oh, doing the lifeguard thing, right?
And I got this opportunity to spend a winter alone in the wilderness, which I thought as close as it could be to becoming a mountain man. But I had no idea what I was doing. I went to the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness, which is on the Montana-Idaho border. Got dropped off in October and picked up in June, and was alone in a tent. to take care of salmon eggs. By Christmas, there was 6 feet of snow where I was. By January, it was 40 below. I survived it somehow. And then Raider worked for the National Park Service and convinced me that I had to apply. It was the greatest job on the planet. But I was a swimmer here at Shorewood High School, and then went on to swimming at the University of Montana. And really the only job skill I had was as a lifeguard. So I worked as a lifeguard in the desert for the National Park Service at Lake Mead behind Hoover Dam. And then finally got a job as a river ranger in the Tetons. So I finally got to float the Snake again, like I had when I was 12. But for 7 years, I floated the Snake every day.
So it's so amazing in this book because, Pete, you take the reader back and forth in time. The reader experiences some of this. And it's maybe even more powerful because it's like, wham, suddenly you're someplace else or in a different time. How did it feel writing that?
It was confusing. That was the biggest challenge or risk of the book. I was 20 when I went into the Selway Bitterroot, and that book became Indian Creek Chronicles. 12 years later, and it's very well known in the West.
And in France.
And in France, yes.
Well, talk about that, because you just came back from France on tour, and you said the French, if we're going to generalize, love this kind of story.
Right. They're wild about the American West, because it's still a very mythical place to them, because they have nothing like that in their country, in Europe. These huge wild places where you can kind of go do anything. So they have that idea of, go west, young man, forge your own future, become whoever you want to be. which kind of happened to me. They published The Indian Creek 10 years ago, and it's been a bestseller ever since. And I was just over there in September for this new book, The Names of the Stars. I got asked 25 years after Indian Creek to take care of more fish eggs in the wilderness. But now it's 45. And
so this is 2004, right?
Yeah.
2004.
Yeah, so it took me another 12 years to write the book, which I think may just be an indication of how slow a thinker I am.
But were you working on it here and there over time, or when did you start to work on this book in earnest?
Indian Creek has done so well that for years, editors have been saying, write it again. And I would always say, but I only spent one winter alone in a tent. So when I got this offer to go back into a different Montana wilderness area, the Bob Marshall, to take care of fish eggs, I thought, oh, this will be that book that they've been asking for forever. And I thought it'd be really easy. So I came out and wrote probably the most boring draft in the history of literature. My French publisher was very eager for it for years. I finally let him read it when I thought I had it figured out, when I was trying to do this time shift and put more of other stories from my life in the wild. And when he read it, he said, oh yes, I think you are very close now. But still, we need more you.
You.
I thought, but wait a minute. There's only one character in the story, and it's me. And he said, oh, yes, yes, we see you. You eat your oatmeals. You take your little walks. And every once in a while, a bear scares you. But we need to know more. We know you have this incredible wife, these two beautiful children, but still you go into the wilds. Why do you do this? What is it that has made you so screwed up? Write the story of how you became so screwed up. I thought, oh, man, just one volume?
You thought you could take your sons on this month-long-ish adventure. And there was that tug and pull of your older son saying, Dad, make the call. Let's do it.
Yeah, it was kind of a joke being the world's foremost fish egg babysitter. A fisheries biologist I knew saw me walking my boys home from school and leaned out his car window and said, you know, Fromm, if you ever feel like getting a job, we might have one. And they told me that they were just starting this plan to introduce grayling to the Bob Marshall Wilderness, and they needed somebody to spend a month out with them. And the boys were right there with me, and we can go camping for a month? Yeah, let's do that. It'll be during school. We get a month off of school. We have to do this. It went on and on, and I've been more of a leaper than a thinker, so I thought, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's do it. And fortunately, their mother, she said, aren't there more grizzly bears there than anywhere in the lower 48? Oh, yeah, they found a cabin, so it's not a tent. There'll be a hard-sided place to stay. It's got bear shutters on it, so it'll be safe. And she just looked at me, why do you think they need bear shutters? So finally she said, you aren't taking the boys. And then the Forest Service, who was loaning us the cabin.
I was going to say, ultimately, that was...
They, yeah, officially said, no, you can't take the cabin if you're taking children back there. And the Fish and Game, who was doing this project, had said they could keep the eggs probably within half a mile of the cabin, maybe a mile. And it wasn't until we rode in on horseback for 25 miles back to the cabin that we found out the eggs were going to be 5 miles from the cabin, which meant a 10-mile walk. But we'd started packing for the three of us, so my kids were just crushed, particularly my older one. When they told me the boys couldn't go, I said, you know, well, I don't. Why would I go then? And Rose was insistent. She just said, that's who you are. This is what you do. You've always done this. And she had an idea that I was giving it all up for the boys, which is not true at all. It was like the boys were just added on to that and made everything so much greater. But so I felt guilty even about leaving them. I was the stay-at-home dad, and this was something I thought would be so cool for him before I realized. I mean, I saw so many bears, it would have been just about suicidal. But when I went in, I thought, oh, this everything I saw, they'd love this, they'd love to do this, and their plan about becoming savages for a month was a great plan. So I felt bad about it. And then first time we got off the horses to go to the creek where the eggs were, and I just got the smell of the, you know, the ponderosa needles in the sun and crushing through the Oregon grape and down into the creek and flashing out a brook trout. And I just was, oh, it's so great to be back. And so at the same time, I was just being tugged both ways because I was really glad I had this chance, which is not a chance a lot of people get. Also, I really missed the boys and felt like I'd let them down almost by not being able to get them in here, which in the end proved to be the best. You know, I couldn't have kept them safe. Aiden in particular is a charger. He just, you know, I couldn't have kept him reined in. So it worked out for the best, but at the time I wasn't aware of that yet.
Looking back, having written this book for your French friends, what does that, the trip itself, mean in retrospect? And, you know, looking at back at your sons when they were just that way, way much younger at the time.
Yeah, they're 21 and 19 now. And, you know, in some ways, they don't, my older son's a big reader. And they've read Indian Creek. They've had to do it for school. And so when this book came out, I gave it to my older son, Nolan, the advanced reading copy. And he came down the next morning and gave it back to me and said, I started this last night, I can't do it. And he said, why not? Because I thought, oh, this is your childhood. This would be a cool thing for them to have. And he says, it's too sad. And I said, sad? Why is it sad? Because, Dad, I couldn't go. I didn't get to go. And that had never occurred to me that, you know, half his life later, it was still this huge thing that he couldn't do. And since then, he's been a wilderness ranger in the Sowie Bitterroot, where Indian Creek is. He's a great boatman, rafts everywhere. Right now, he's on a sailboat somewhere between Fiji and New Zealand. So he's getting his own adventures. I don't feel too bad for him, but...
And what about Aiden? How did he react? He's the younger.
Aiden is pretty much unfazed by anything. So it was, oh, I can't go? That's too bad. And next.
So should we let people know how the eggs did, or should we leave it for them to read?
Yeah, that's the big mystery of the book. That's the driving tension. Do the eggs survive? No, the eggs did fine. The Arctic grayling is a leftover from the last ice age. It's a very northern cold water fish that moved down with the glaciers and then got left behind. And there was a population in Michigan which died out. The Montana one is the Big Hole River is the last in the country. And so they're trying to get another population started in a river. They can introduce them to lakes and they do fine, but they want a river population. And it turned out that most of these fish just swam down to the lake at the end of the river anyway. So it wasn't probably a hugely successful program, but the eggs did fine. I kept them alive.
Author Pete Fromm is a Shorewood native. He's a 5-time winner of the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Award. Fromm now lives in Montana, and he talked with Lake Effect's Susan Bentz when he returned to Wisconsin to talk about his latest book, The Names of the Stars.